Governments have issued very strict limitations on cell phone use by children. In the public schools in France, there are no iPads. There is no wireless, partly for the reasons of addiction, but also because of these concerns about health. And in the case of Leonard Hardell in Sweden, once he started to publish those findings in 2002, the industry immediately mobilized to have two of their industry-friendly scientists immediately put out a paper condemning Hardell. Well, we found out that those two scientists, at the very time that they were posing as independent scientists and saying that Dr. Hardell's findings were methodologically incoherent, they were consulting. They were consulting to Motorola as expert witnesses in a brain tumor case. So who are you going to believe?
Well, we have to leave it there, but we're going to do part two and post it as a web exclusive online at democracynow.org. There's just too much to talk about, from the Internet of Things, talking about 5G, and how the campaign here mirrors what happened with Big Tobacco. Mark Hertzgaard's new special investigation we'll link to is headlined How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Masood, Charina Nadura, Nat Needham, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Paul Huckabee, our engineers. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Check out democracynow.org for video and audio podcasts and transcripts.
It's 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Stay right there. Coming up, Sojourner Truth looks at how Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy is being carried out today with organizers from the Poor People's Campaign.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the rededication of the Gaddar Commemoration Plaque on Saturday, April 7th, at noon at the Astoria Maritime Park in Astoria. The Gaddar Party was founded in Astoria in 1913. It became a global movement to end British colonial rule in India. Its roots in Astoria, including ties to Finnish and other labor radicals, were honored in 2013 with a celebration and a plaque. That plaque was stolen last October. The East Indian community and other people of conscience will gather to rededicate and celebrate its installation on April 7th. Again, that's the rededication of the Gaddar Commemoration Plaque on Saturday, April 7th, at noon, at the Astoria Maritime Park, 200 West Marine Drive in Astoria, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today's show is about family, as we mark 50 years since the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Why is it about family? Because it is personal. Those of us alive when he was killed remember the moment we heard of his death, and we remember what it felt like. It still, today, feels like we lost a member of our family. It is still difficult to process. It is not objective. It is not with the distance of a reporter, as mainstream media tells us we must be. It is indeed personal in our families and in our wider community. As we remember Dr. Martin Luther King, it will not be with a nostalgic lens, but we will focus on how his legacy is actively being carried out today. He was a man of action. He gave us all strength and direction, and we continue to mourn his loss, a leader stripped away from us at the young age of 39 years old. Let us hear the words of Harry Belafonte.
Sometimes the good Lord. I say sometimes the good Lord accepts his own perfection and closes his eyes and goes ahead and takes his own good time. And he makes himself a man. Yes. And sometimes that man gets hold of the idea of what it is possible for him to do. And that man lets that idea guide him as he grows and struggles and stumbles and sorrows until finally he comes into his own God-given shape and achieves his own individual and lonely place in this world. It doesn't happen very often. Oh, no. But when it does, then even the stones will cry out in witness to his vision, and the hills and towers will echo his words and deeds, and his examples will live in the hearts of men forever. The Master doesn't make many like that, because that kind of man is dangerous to the sloppy ways of the world. That kind of man loves truth even more than he loves his life or his wife or his children. Because he's been designated and set aside to do the hard tasks that have to be done. That kind of man will do what he sees as justice, even if the earth yawns and swallows him down. And even then, his deeds will persist in the land forever. So you look at him. You look at him a while. And be thankful that the Lord let such a man touch our lives. Even if it were for only a little while.
And that was Harry Belafonte speaking about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Our guest today, Maureen Taylor, Kate Ziegler, Pastor Eddie Anderson. Those who have taken up the mantle of Dr. King to actively carry on his legacy. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Donald Trump on Twitter this morning pledges, quote, strong action today on immigration. The tweet comes a day after Trump said he would use the military to guard the U.S. border with Mexico.
The Mexican border is very unprotected by our laws. We have horrible, horrible and very unsafe laws in the United States, and we're going to be able to do something about that hopefully soon. Hopefully Congress will get their act together and get in and create some very powerful laws like Mexico has and like Canada has and like almost all countries have. We don't have laws. So we are preparing for the military to secure our border.
The White House later said Trump wants to mobilize the National Guard. A senior official said the White House counsel's office has been working on the idea for several weeks. The administration appears to be considering a model similar to a 2006 operation in which President George W. Bush deployed National Guard troops to the southern border. Trump appeared to claim credit yesterday for halting a caravan of about 1,100 Central Americans, many from Honduras, who had been marching along roadsides and train tracks in the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca. But organizer Irineo Mujica said the caravan of largely Central Americans fleeing violence had never intended to reach the U.S. border. In remarks broadcast on Al Jazeera, he accused Trump of demonizing the refugees.
If he wants to put troops at the border, perfect, he can put them there. But to taint us, to use us to enforce his policies of fear, as if these people were soldiers. Look at the women. Look at the women and children fleeing the violence.
Mujica said the caravan was not bound for the U.S. and was instead headed to an immigrants' rights symposium in central Mexico later this week. A woman who believed she was being suppressed by YouTube and told her family members she hated the company opened fire at YouTube headquarters in the city of San Bruno, south of San Francisco. She wounded three people, one of them critically, before taking her own life. Police investigators said they don't believe Nassim Agdam targeted the victims when she fired off several rounds with a handgun in a courtyard at company headquarters. Her father, Ismail Agdam, told the Bay Area News Group that His daughter hated YouTube and was angry the company stopped paying for a video she posted on the platform. California Senator Dianne Feinstein, a longtime advocate of gun control measures, noted that while the U.S. has just 4% of the world's population, it has 42% of the world's guns. Feinstein said, quote, "Only in America are people evacuating the scene of a shooting with their hands on their heads, a familiar sight." In California, some Democratic lawmakers want to put stricter limits on when police can use deadly force. Two assembly members are introducing a bill they say will make encounters with police less deadly. They note that half the people shot and killed by police last year were unarmed. The legislation comes in the wake of the fatal Sacramento police shooting of Stephon Clark in his grandmother's backyard. Christopher Martinez reports.
Democratic Assemblymember Shirley Weber of San Diego is an author of the Police Accountability and Community Protection Act.
This policy authorizes police officers to use deadly force only when it is necessary to prevent imminent and serious bodily injury or death. That is, if given the totality of the circumstances, there is no reasonable alternative to using deadly force, which is including warnings, verbal, persuasion, or other non-lethal methods or resolutions to or de-escalation. We're not saying that law enforcement officers can never use deadly force. I want to stress that. Deadly force can be used, but only when it is completely necessary.
Under current law, police can use deadly force whenever an objectively reasonable officer would do so, regardless of whether there is actually a threat to life or whether there are any less deadly alternatives, such as de-escalation or just waiting for backup. Reporting from the state capitol, I'm Christopher Martinez.
50 years after the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, the civil rights leader's family and contemporaries are marking the anniversary of his death with marches, speeches, and reflections on his legacy. The commemorations stretch from his hometown of Atlanta to Memphis, where he died, and points beyond. Among the first events is a march led by the same Memphis Sanitation Workers Union, whose low pay King had come to protest when he was shot. Another event will kick off about the same time in Atlanta. The organizers of a new Poor People's Campaign are planning 40 days of marches, sit-ins, and other peaceful protests. China has issued a $50 billion list of U.S. goods, including soybeans and small aircraft, for possible tariff hikes in an escalating and potentially damning tit-for-tat trade dispute with the Trump administration. The 106 products included the biggest U.S. exports to China. In the first minutes after the stock market opened, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped by triple digits. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and of course today marking the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And what we are going to do today, we are going to focus on those who are carrying on the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. As I said in my intro, this is personal for many of us. It is difficult actually to get through the show. It's still a very, very emotional moment. It still remains raw even 50 years later. For so many, and for also for many young people who did not know Dr. Martin Luther King when he was alive, who were born decades after his death, but nevertheless are moved by him, by his words. And we really reject the attempts to sanitize the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, because we know he was a man of love. He was a man of peace. He was also a militant, and calling, including for a general strike when he was in Memphis, Tennessee, where he was assassinated, there supported the cause of low-wage sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee. What I'd like to do now, just kicking off the discussion about carrying on the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, I would like to play a clip of the Reverend William Barber, who is one of the joint coordinators, along with Reverend Liz Theo Harris of the New Poor People's Campaign. You may know that before Martin Luther King was assassinated, he announced Poor People's Campaign. This is after meeting with welfare mothers and others and realizing that we had to focus on economic conditions. As he said, it was all well and good to integrate a lunch counter, but if you don't have the money to buy the burger, what is the point? And the Poor People's Campaign brought people together, Black people, Native American people, immigrants, white people across the board, and it led to what really is the first modern occupation of Washington, D.C., because after Martin Luther King was assassinated, and many think he was assassinated because he was bringing people together under this banner of the Poor People's Campaign, the Reverend Ralph Abernathy and others picked up the mantle and made sure that the occupation or the tent city that was set up in Washington, D.C., representing the Poor People's Campaign, took place. And now today, the Reverend William Barber and others have taken up the mantle with the new Poor People's Campaign. So let us go now to hear this clip. It is from News One.
You think about what we have happening in this country right now is Dr. King in that speech took on the isms. He took on racism, materialism, and militarism. And in our culture right now, we have persons literally who want to lead and run and who are elected for office who promote modern-day systemic racism, by refusing to address the issue of voter suppression, for instance, and by lying about the voter fraud. We just saw in the paper last night where Jeff Sessions is talking about considering rolling back the consent decree that have been placed on these various cities and police departments that have violated their oath in the way in which they've treated Black people and brown people. We see poverty at an all-time high. We see candidates that are willing, there are people that are willing to deny living wages and attack the poor. As I said in that about the fight over the Affordable Care Act, the people that didn't vote for it, that brought it down, was because they wanted to do more harm to the poor. And then we look at militarism. We're talking about spending $54 billion to an already bloated military budget. And what could we do with $54 billion? We could end child poverty in America. We could provide everybody with health care. We are in a moral crisis, just like Dr. King said then. We need a moral revolution of values. We need a moral revival. Dr. King knew that when you deal with the sins of injustice and oppression, you can't limit yourself, as some people want to limit him, to just being a Black leader or just speaking on civil rights. Now, remember, many of the same people also didn't really want him to speak on civil rights. But what they were afraid of is that he would unite the anti-war movement and the fight against poverty and civil rights, and that he was going to eventually do this Poor People's Campaign, which is one of the major reasons he was shot. Yeah, we have an obligation as moral leaders. We can't be silent. He said silent is betrayal. And one of the greatest silence right now that's sinful is how quiet many pulpits are and many people of faith are. In the face of all of this oppression, whether it's the silence of so-called white evangelicals who don't deal with the issues, or whether it's the silence sometimes in our churches where people are very engaged in praise parties but are not engaged in any kind of protest against the injustices of our society today.
Speak,
both
sir.
Silences are sinful.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Why I'm here today in Memphis, joining with Black Lives Matter, Fight for 15, the Moral Revival. They are marching not to remember, not to commemorate, but they're fighting for living wages in Memphis today, the same place Dr. King King came and was killed when he was fighting for sanitation workers 50 years ago. 50 years later, they still are fighting for 15 in Memphis. And that's one of the reasons we'll be marching today in this effort to make sure that America does right by all of her citizens.
And of course, that was a clip that of the 49th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And that was the Reverend William Barber, one of the joint coordinators of the New Poor People's Campaign back in 2017, as he said, in Memphis. Now, what I'd like to do now is to just share just a short clip from you of the same Reverend William Barber really fired up. And this is from a speech he gave in Southern California, where he is making an appeal to each and every one of us to break our silence and do something.
It's time for a breakthrough. People are spending $10 billion on elections. It's time for a breakthrough. We got to break through the money. We got to break through the silence. We got to break through the bad theology. We got to break through the hate. Until every child is educated. Until the sick receive health care. Until the poor are lifted and not pushed down. Until voting rights are secure. We want a democracy that protects the rights of everybody. It's time for a breakthrough. So we can be one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. It's time for a breakthrough.
It's time for a breakthrough. I'd now like to welcome our guests, all deeply involved in carrying on actively the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. First, I'd like to welcome Maureen Taylor. She has been in the front lines of the struggle of the impoverished and in particular women for decades. She has served as chair of the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization since 1993 and was elected treasurer of the National Welfare Rights Union back in 1994. She is a dedicated community activist who represents public assistance recipients at Michigan's Department of Human Service offices over case disputes and works with political leaders and corporations to draft policies and procedures aiming to protect impoverished and low-income families. She has received many distinguished awards for her community organizing and leadership. She speaks at conferences and university campuses across the U.S. on poverty and safety net needs, changes in labor and the economy, civil rights history, utility shutoffs, and organizing. She is also a mother, an educator, and a member of local several boards and national community organizations. Maureen Taylor, welcome.
Ooh, good morning. No wonder I'm tired. Good morning.
I hear you. Okay. I'd also like to welcome Kate Ziegler. Kate says she's grateful to participate in activism, art, and community building in the beautiful and challenging city of Los Angeles. She helps lead Moral Mondays Los Angeles, a co-founded effort to bridge mindfulness and activism and to connect individuals' passions, capacities to direct action, community work that will create a kinder, sustainable future that we and future generations can live in. She's helping to move forward the work of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, and serves as one of the co-chairs of that campaign in California. She lives in a conscious community with her partner and really just wants to figure out how we can all be more human with each other. How do we open our minds, hearts, and wills to collectively heal the world, to light, to dark, and the wonder in between? Kate Ziegler, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning, Margaret.
Yes, and I'd like to welcome the pastor, Eddie Anderson. He's also a co-chair of California's Poor People's Campaign. He is the senior pastor at McCarty Memorial Christian Church. He is, by the way, a third-generation pastor, which is noteworthy. He is also involved in other community-based organizations, including Black Lives Matter. Pastor Eddie Anderson, welcome.
Good morning, Margaret.
Okay, Maureen, we're going to start with you because all three of you, perhaps in different ways, but similarly, are working to carry on the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And Maureen, let us actually hear from each of you your thoughts on this day, this historic day, the 50th anniversary of his assassination. Earlier in my introduction, I said, you know, this is about family because it feels personal. Those of us alive at the time that he was killed remember the moment, and others born after that certainly are inspired by his words and resist the kind of sanitizing of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King that is taking place with all kinds of people making money, you know, off of him one way or the other, and not necessarily working to do the work of carrying out his legacy. Maureen Taylor, let's start with you.
Miss Margaret, it is right that we should pause on this day to take stock of what happened some 50 years ago. A man of peace, a man of wisdom, but more than anything, the world knows him as a man able to speak the words of love and grace and tolerance. And to just think that 50 years ago, this person was shot in the throat, the place where he was able to let those words resonate and come out of his mouth. Someone shot him in the throat. And it just speaks to the kind of violence 50 years ago that we're facing with these young students today. It is right that we stop and take a moment to consider what this day means and to dissect the difference between a dream and vision. Dreams, when we wake up, the dreams are gone. What Dr. King was talking about is the dream that should lead and should have led by now to a vision of a people, especially folks in this country, able to live together under whatever circumstances there are. And so, you know, the sanitizing, as you speak of Dr. King, and was he a religious man, and was he a faithful man, and all of this is just more fodder for this question of division. When Dr. Barber talks about this question of tolerance, talks about how we need to review what Dr. King was embarking on, a poor people's campaign, it's absolutely the correct thing to do in order to give credence and to give love and faith to the work and to the death of this wonderful man. We should be across the nation trying to continue his work and his vision. We have to focus ourselves on what does it mean for so many people in this country to be considered poor and low income, welfare recipients under attack, women and children under attack, 17,000 new people on a list, new addresses on a list in Detroit, slated and threatened with water shutoffs. It's an outrage. It's scandalous. So April the 4th, all over the country, people are selling pictures and selling bracelets, and, you know, it just goes on. But the good thing is that after April the 4th, Miss Margaret, we have April the 5th and the 6th and the rest of the time. So some of us are stopping for a moment to pause today, but we were, the folks that are on this call, we were working yesterday and last week and last month, and we'll be working tomorrow and next week and the following months, right up until May when we're ready to start this 40 days of not treading water with Noah, but 40 days of treading on why do you punish low-income people. So
yeah. Well said, Maureen Taylor. Kate Ziegler, just your thoughts. I mean, you're a younger person. You certainly were not alive at the time that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. But I'd like you to just share thoughts about how he has inspired your work. You talk about abridging mindfulness and activism and connecting individuals' passions, capacities to direct direct action and community work. Just give us your thoughts on this, the 50th anniversary, as a younger person. Yeah, Kate.
Sure. I think when, even though I wasn't around during the time that he was alive and speaking, that when I've read his speeches or I've looked at the work that he did, his level of courage and also intellect and bravery, and not only putting his life really on the line and putting his life into such a forward trajectory of saying, I'm going to, with all of these other leaders, take on what seems like an implausible and unbeatable feat, which is seeing that all of these injustices, which by themselves are large enough to not want to tackle and get out of bed and fight, that he said, I'm going to take these three injustices, things as big as materialism, as the military, as the war, as systemic racism and poverty, and I'm going to shine a light on how they are interlocked. And then after shining a light and bringing awareness to it, I'm also going to fight it and mobilize the entire country to come for a First Poor People's campaign and see that economic inequality, and talking about the really hard and very dangerous stuff of economics and how the way that our country works and the way that our dollar works is a driving force of why there's so much oppression and violence and marginalization. That's so courageous to me, and it's really inspiring, because I think as a younger activist and an organizer, when we have these big ideas and we can see from just being on any street in any city, in any organization, that so many people are suffering, you start seeing that there are these different commonalities of why we're all suffering. And it feels also, even today, 50 years later, very impossible and very hard to understand how to mobilize enough, to how to inspire enough to bring people together. And so having a visionary and someone prophetic like Dr. King to be able to constantly refer back to for inspiration and depth and soul is so inspiring. So today I really challenge myself to just look at myself and my work and see, you know, am I doing enough with full grace and no type of judgment on myself? And that's where mindfulness and activism to me really connects, and is the work that we're doing in Moral Mondays Los Angeles, is because the distorted moral narrative that we even talk about in the second campaign right now, and that Dr. Barber talks about, that's something that we also really have, I think, within ourselves. And because we are a system of millions and millions of people in America, the systems and policies being put in place are created by the power at the top. But we also all have a part in letting those systems still run and be oppressive. And so it is our duty at the bottom to then build up and challenge those powers within ourselves and also within the system.
Yes, and Pastor Eddie Anderson, you are a third generation pastor. You're also a young person. You were not around during the time of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And I actually do remember the activism that took place in the church at that time. I mean, churches, when my family first immigrated from Barbados to Brooklyn, and the churches there were very, very active, bringing Martin Luther King in to speak, and all kinds of protests, gatherings of community meetings happening in the church. And it seems as though something has happened, although there are still churches that try to hold on, but we don't see that level of activism happening in terms of civil rights and other rights in the church today, even though there are people like yourself and many others who hold this view. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was a very young man like yourself. You're a very young pastor, Pastor Eddie Anderson. You know, with the evangelicals, the right-wing movements, and not really speaking out about the rise of racism that we see across this country. I read a very disturbing article just this morning about the rise of racism and Nazi open, like normalizing. This is normalized in Central Europe. So, Pastor Eddie Anderson, on this historic day, your thoughts?
Well, today, thank you, Margaret. Today is really heavy for me. I am a third generation pastor, as you mentioned. My grandfather actually worked with Dr. King down in South Georgia, and I went to college at Morehouse College. So, and I'm from Atlanta, and so Dr. King was all around, and his energy and spirit is definitely with us on today. It is a heavy day, and your comment on the faith community is absolutely right. It's deeply troubles my soul. I mean, one of the things that Dr. King said in his Promised Land speech was that it's okay to preach about, you know, white robes over yonder, but you have to talk about shoes and dresses here as well, right? That we also have to not ask the question about, you know, what would happen to me if I help somebody, or what would happen to them if we don't stop and help people. And in California, for instance, you have 60,000 homeless people or houseless folks in the state. And we have, you know, the LA Times writing about how we have the resources to solve poverty, to house people. But yet faith communities are being silent while their neighbors are saying, you know, people can't live in the park, or we can't build a transitional housing for people in the park. Or people are being silent as Stephon Clark, you know, gets, you know, shot 20 times in his own grandmother's backyard, 8 times in the back. And some of the churches on Sunday, while we're talking about Jesus, they're not connecting Jesus and Stephon Clark, right? And so these are deeply moral issues that are troubling our churches, that our churches are, and our faith leaders are sitting on the sidelines, and our communities are asking, where are our moral voices? Where are the activists? Where are the faith leaders who are willing to stand in the public square and declare truth and righteousness like Dr. King did? Dr. King was led by his faith. He was deeply a man of faith. And at this time where our nation seems to be very polarized and tense, and everything is about race, and you know, I was sitting with some members yesterday, and one of my members, who's 89 years old, he said, Reverend, it was really bad when I was growing up and in my life, but now it just seems very, very tense that everywhere I go, people are bringing up race, and they always want to, you know, defame one another, and they're forgetting the point that what is the that we're God's children. And so if we're not working for all of God's children, then we all go down together, as Dr. King also said in that speech. We either go up together or all down together. And so how are we really, as a faith community, leaning in is the question and the real moral crisis of our time, that we can allow and we can sit silently while people are being mass incarcerated, while women and children are some of the highest numbers of poverty in the nation, while homelessness and houselessness is on the rise, while black people who have wealth are more likely to be poor or 2 or 3 paychecks away from being in poverty themselves. But we're just being silent and letting the systematic, fabricated system of oppression hold us down and tell us we can't breathe.
Right. Thank you for that, the Reverend Eddie Anderson. And this is Margaret Prescott, and we are spending the hour focusing on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Not so much in a nostalgic way, although it's very heavy. It's very personal. It's about family, as I said earlier. His assassination still feels like we've lost a member of our immediate family, but also on how his legacy is actively being carried on today. We're going to take a short station break, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Maureen Taylor, Kate Ziegler, and the Reverend Eddie Anderson. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is 90.7 KBOO. It's 8:37. Press Watch coming up at 9 o'clock.
I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Again, John Legend, I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom today as we mark the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King with heavy hearts. It's really just about how do we move forward? How are we carrying out his legacy? A time of remembrance, a time to be inspired. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning, for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. You can also check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. All of our back shows are archived there with a description of each show, and you'll also get other news and views on the website. And if you're still a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. We are on SoundCloud. You can look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today we would like to give a SoundCloud shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Memphis, Tennessee. And our guests on the line with us, Maureen Taylor, Kate Ziegler, the Reverend Eddie Anderson, all campaigners on the ground working actively to carry on the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Before we continue discussing with them, let us hear some words from Martin Luther King, almost prophetic. It is really gives you goosebumps because it is the last speech he gave at his church. And it really sounds as though he's almost giving his own eulogy. He's talking about how he wants to be remembered.
If any of you around when I have to meet my day, I don't want a long speech. And if you get somebody to deliver the eulogy, tell them not to talk to you. Every now and then I wonder what I want them to say. Tell them not to mention that I have a Nobel Peace Prize. That isn't important. Tell them not to mention that I have 300 or 400 other awards. That's not important. Tell them not to mention where I went to school. I'd like somebody to mention that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to give his life serving others. I'd like for somebody to say that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to love somebody. I want you to say that day that I tried to be right on the walk with. I want you to be able to say that day that I did try to feed the hungry. I want you to be able to say that day that I did try in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want you to say on that day that I did try in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want you to say that I tried to love and serve humanity. Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace. I was a drum major for righteousness. And all of the other shallow things will not matter. I won't have any money to leave behind. I won't have the fine and luxurious things of life to leave behind. But I just want to leave a committed life behind. And that's all I want to say. If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word of song, if I can show somebody he's traveling wrong, then my living will not be in vain. If I can do my duty as a Christian, or if I can bring salvation to a world once wrought, if I can spread the message as the master taught, then my living will not be in vain.
Just incredible words from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. That is from the film King, a filmed record. And Maureen Taylor, we're going to start with you because we listening to the words, inspiring words, and really so sad. But nevertheless, when he talks about being a drum major for justice, a drum major for peace, a drum major for righteousness, and how he wants to be remembered. Maureen Taylor, in your work for decades now, you really have been carrying on that work, working with some of the most impoverished people in the United States. Women and children today are 70% of the poor in the United States. And we, the Martin Luther King started the Poor People's Campaign, and here you have the Reverend William Barber, the Reverend Liz Theo Harris, and actually all of you on the phone working to carry on that work now with the new Poor People's Campaign. Maureen Taylor, tell us why, as a welfare rights campaigner, this campaign, this new Poor People's Campaign, is so important and why you are involved in it.
Absolutely, and I think you referenced that clip by using the phrase goosebumps. And whenever you hear that, those words, the drum major speak, and my life not being lived any way other than towards social justice, it makes you just take a deep breath. You know, I've been with welfare rights for a long time, and welfare rights has one mantra. We work and have always worked to eliminate poverty. And along the way, we run into so many battles and whatnot, and people try to quote the Bible at me and at our organization, the poor will always be with you. That's that not what the Bible says. That's a line taken out of context. Jesus is talking about the poor will always be with folks as long as greed and self-centeredness and intolerance is part of the program. The torture of poor people, the absolute pain, pain being directed toward low-income people is just intolerable. To make people live on food stamps that don't have work, that equates to about $3.10 a day, it's just intolerable. It is unconscionable. And so when Liz Theo Harris especially got in contact with Welfare Rights to say there is something brewing, a new Poor People's Campaign 2-3 years ago, we're going to start talking about it. We've been waiting. We've been in place for decades waiting for others to catch up to this concept that America is a place of torture. It's not news to anyone. I mean, I've been here 200 years already, and I have recollection of Miss Margaret, of a 32-year-old carpenter who was talking about peace and let's try to get along, and some, you know, hung him up on a cross. I got a recollection of a Muslim guy coming out of Flint and Detroit that was talking about we need to deal with this question of justice and inequality toward people of color, and he got killed. I remember some books about a fella in India. He wandering around talking about how we should treat each other. Sojourner Truth is buried in Battle Creek, Michigan, and I used to take tours up to Battle Creek so we could look at her gravestone that asked the question, is God dead? So our Welfare Rights is a national organization. We've got members in 30-something states. And so we've been waiting for quite some time for the Poor People's Campaign to resurrect so we could get right in there and whatever energy, spunk, political guidance, this question of technology that is now on board that creates thousands, tens of thousands of homeless people every day. Technology used to enhance labor, now technology replaces labor. So all these robots and technological automated tools putting people out of work forever. And somewhere along the line, that 1% that Kate referenced believes that they have the right to torture people, to make certain children can't go to school, they can't read. All of this conversation about the economy's on firm ground. And I'm looking on TV, Miss Margaret, and watching teachers picking and everywhere with signs that say, I need ink. Mm-hmm. What the heck is going on here? You know, even Tupac had a line in a song he put together a long time ago that talked about in this country they find money for the war, but there's no money for the poor. Mm-hmm. So I am in lockstep. I say I'm already 200 years old, and I got another 200 years to go. So I'm ready. I've been waiting on Kate. I've been waiting on the Reverend. For decades, and I'm so glad you're here. You're so very welcome.
All righty. And Kate Ziegler, just following up from Maureen Taylor there, it is true indeed that the most impoverished mothers in this country have been vilified. They are referred to as lazy, as doing nothing, as though raising children is nothing, isn't an actual contribution. Welfare has been under attack. People talk about the working poor, and that, of course, would leave out people, the 10 million people in the United States who live on no wages whatsoever. So tell us a bit now, for people who may not be familiar with the four pillars of the Poor People's Campaign, and how you are really trying to bring that focus on poverty together with the other three pillars of evil, as it is put in the Poor People's Campaign. Kate Ziegler.
Yes, thank you, Margaret. So the four pillars of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, are systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation or ecocide, and the war economy. And the three pillars outside of ecological devastation are the three pillars of the first campaign that Martin Luther King Jr. was speaking to in the last years of his life. And so those pillars are more important than ever, because we kept those pillars not just to commemorate the first campaign, but because the symptoms and the systems, the deeply rooted systems and infrastructure which create all of the symptoms of oppression in our society, are worse today than they were 50 years ago, and it doesn't deny the countless struggles and work being done by the people in the trenches for so many decades, but it's because the systems still haven't been undone. And so being able to bring about these four pillars and connecting, where are the intersecting points of racism to poverty? You can see with the school-to-prison pipeline and mass incarceration and even the justice and the bail system, that there are all these parts which connect every person's work, not on the left or the right, but people's work in caring for the other, in bringing about justice and bringing about rights and economic equality to the lower class and the poor people in this nation. You can see that they're all connected, because when they're fighting and when we're fighting in our own parts of the work, other bigger things are keeping it where we have to keep doing the work. And so there are these intersecting points with everything. If you look at ecological devastation, it's not just talking about animal rights or the environment and that we want clean water, but it's everything. When you look at the fight in Flint for clean water and that they're still using bottled water, or you look at Standing Rock, and not just Standing Rock, which caught the national media and international media attention, but every place that is drilling in poor communities, in communities on reservation land, on all of these places that are poor people, you can really see that the poor get the brunt of all oppression, because they don't have the so-called power that would allow them, like the neighborhood before Standing Rock and DAPL was put in, a white affluent neighborhood who said, we absolutely are not going to have a DAPL pipeline in our backyard, because it's going to leak, it's going to affect our water and our community. And because of racism and systemic racism, they were allowed to keep it out of their backyard, but then it was put in the reservation territory. And so that is something that you can see in any example of oppression. There's something about poverty, and there's usually something about racism. And that's why we're carrying on the work, to really show people that we're not alone, and that they're all connected on such a deep and sickening level. We all have to be part of it to undo something that seems so untoppable, or unable to be toppled, and that's us coming together as a whole.
Right. Thank you, Kate Ziegler. And Reverend Eddie Anderson, you're going to have to help me work a miracle here, because there's one other little clip I want to play of Ruby Dee on Martin Luther King, but I also want to hear some final thoughts from you. I mean, here we have immigrants under attack, Donald Trump talking about bringing troops to the border, how people are, there's an attempt to carve us up, black and brown from each other, impoverish white people, from the rest of us. And Reverend Eddie Anderson, also tell us, for people who want to get involved in the Poor People's Campaign, what they could do, because these 40 days of action are coming up. Reverend Eddie.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we see that the greatest way that people can conquer or is to divide us. And so I think the main thing in this campaign is that we're saying that we the people are going to establish justice in this nation, that we the people are going to bend that moral arc that bends towards justice, be benders of it. And so it's really a call to action that today is heavy, but tomorrow is when we say that we are going to unite, that the rejected can lead a more revival, that the broken can lead a breakthrough. And so we are asking everyone to go to the Poor People's Campaign .org to join a local steering committee in your state. We're in 42 different states across the country. So we're asking people to join or to just come to the Capitol. So come to the Capitol starting around Mother's Day, the day after around Mother's Day, for people to come to the Capitol, and we will be there in 42 states. And if you see your state listed, then we should be at your Capitol, and we will be raising our voices and saying we're not going to let a wall divide us. We're not going to let bad policy and bad laws, which keep women and children impoverished, which keep guns on our street, which let cops use brutal force against black and brown people, divide us anymore. And so we invite you to come on out and join us, to get off the sideline, to say now is the time to act.
All righty, time for a breakthrough. And what we're going to do now is to hear some moving words from the late Ruby Dee on the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King.
Is finally ours, this freedom, this liberty, this beautiful and terrible thing, needful to man as air, usable as the earth, when it belongs at last to our children, when it is truly instinct, brain matter, reflex action, when it is finally won, when it is more than the gaudy mumbo-jumbo of politicians, this man, this Negro, visioning a world where none is lonely, none hunted, alien. This man, superb in love and logic, shall be remembered, oh, not with statues, rhetoric, not with legends and poems and wreaths of bronze alone, but with the lives grown out of his life, lives fleshing the dream of this needful, beautiful thing.
We demand that segregation be ended.
All righty, and there you heard Ruby Dee, and you began to hear a little bit of A. Philip Randolph back in 1963 at the March on Washington. You have been listening to this one-hour special as we mark the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And our guests have been Maureen Taylor, Kate Ziegler, the Reverend Eddie Anderson. Maureen Taylor, thank you so very much for your work and for joining us. And Kate Ziegler, same for you. As Maureen says, we've been waiting for you. Kate Ziegler.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And the Reverend Eddie Anderson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All righty. And what I'd like to do now is for us to hear a little bit from Richie Havens, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? He talks about his mother in this, but it reminds me so much of the feeling of losing a family member, and many of us feel that with the loss of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, snatched from us at 39 years old. And I'd like to, so we'll go out with that song, but first I'd like to thank the entire Sojourner Truth team. Today's show produced by myself, Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank Sherelle Withers, our intern, our assistant producer, Stephanie Case, Mr. T, Teddy Robinson, our engineer, engineer. And if you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. You'll stay tuned for more continued coverage of the 50th anniversary of the death of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King with Rising Up. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. We're going to be looking at the really bigger picture with a one-hour special on cosmology on Sojourner Truth. And then on Friday, we will be doing our special remembering Winnie Mandela, considered the mother of the nation in South Africa. They are mourning her passing today, even as they remember Martin Luther King. And now, Richie Havens, thank you for listening. This is Margaret Prescott. You are
holy. Good morning. It's 8:59, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up, Press Watch up next in about 1 minute. Teresa Mitchell's weekly news and commentary program, digging deep into the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, Air Cascadia interviews, news, and commentary. Dennis Bernstein brings us flashpoints at 10:15. At 11, I'm between the covers this morning. James Anderson talks about his new novel, Lullaby Road. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk looks at the advantages of being part of a writer's group. And all of this great programming because of KBOO members. To keep informed and get involved, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's 8:59, and Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch is next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Peace Jam Northwest on Saturday, April 7th and Sunday, April 8th at the Erb Memorial Union on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. Open to teens of age 14 to 18, the Peace Jam Conference will include several addresses by Dr. Shireen Abadi, the first woman ever to become a judge in Iran and the first Muslim woman to win the Peace Prize. There will also be service projects, workshops in leadership, civic engagement, peace building, and more. Again, that's the Peace Jam Northwest on Saturday, April 7th, and Sunday, April 8th, at the Erb Memorial Union on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I want to jump right into the program today. It's 9:01 Pacific time. 34-year-old Saeed Vassell, who was known for walking around Brooklyn's Crown Heights with an orange Bible and sometimes acting out his bipolar suffering, found a bent pipe yesterday, a bent pipe attached to a canister. It looked like a kind of steam.